Welcome to the Personal Financial Planning Section podcast, delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment planning, and practice management, designed to help you best serve your clients and take your practice to the next level. I'm your PFP section host, Sarah Bradley. Be sure to visit us at aicpa.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guest.
Thank you, Sarah. This is Bob Keebler, and we're here to talk about year-end tax planning ideas, part two. In part two of this two-part series, we're going to talk about 529 plans, opportunity zones, gifts and trusts, grantor-retained annuity trusts, and state income tax planning with trusts. Let's get started. One of the interesting ideas is 529 plans. Every year this comes up, and I think all of us are aware exactly how expensive it is and almost impossible for many families to pay for college. So we have to look at this, and there are a number of ways the tax law can help. Probably the most popular way is to use a 529 plan. Contributions are made with after-tax dollars. You're going to get tax-free growth and tax-free withdrawals if you stay within the rules, and you also... this can qualify for the annual gift tax exclusion. Matter of fact, you can even make 5 years of gifts at once with the right election. Now, contributions are not considered when you're looking at any other contributions like your IRAs or anything like that. It's a totally different universe. Basically, when you do 529 plans, you do not have the age and AGI limitations of ESAs. Between husband and wife, they can put together $30,000 into a 529 plan. Remember, you can make an election to make 5 years of contributions at once. And the math pays, the math makes total sense. You're going to be able to create money to pay for college. It's a very easy thing. Now, for wealthy clients, it's even more advantageous than for middle class families because you get the break on the estate and gift side and you get the break on the income tax side. 529 plans do not include books, supplies, dormitory fees, board, or other similar expenses. But remember, your clients can pay those directly to the university and not use any of their lifetime exemption or any of their annual exclusion. Some states also provide creditor protection for 529 plans. And in some states, they will allow trust to own 529 plans, which gives you more control over the money if you're the grantor, because now you have a trusted advisor or a child being the trustee of that trust. The IRS, of course, is concerned about abuse. If you do a trust, remember you're going to have to allocate GST exemption. Now, qualified educational expenses include tuition at certain nursery schools, private elementary schools, private high schools, and public and private colleges and universities. Now, extracurricular education expenses can also qualify in some instances, such as ballet school, martial arts, or even yoga. That's the heart of the 529, but remember, put in the back of your mind that 529 plans may be used with trusts. Let's switch over to opportunity zones. Qualified opportunity zones, which we've probably all heard a lot about, are certain designated low-income census tracts. Now, that's not always the case. In my little world, by Lambeau Field, which is where the Packers play, very nice area of our metropolitan area, there is an opportunity zone. And that particular village, the village of Shawabadon, is going out of its way to promote that opportunity zone. And there's very nice 4- and 5-story apartment buildings going up in there. The rents are well over $1,000 a month. This will attract a very well-paid group of people there. And it's not like you're investing in a terrible area that where you'd be worried about the safety of your investment. It's nothing like that. As a matter of fact, it's just the opposite. So now, tax incentives for investing in qualified opportunity zones include deferral of unrecognized gain, a reduction or elimination of unrecognized gain. And how this works is capital gain from the sale of an investment is not recognized if rolled into a qualified opportunity zone within 180 days. Moreover, the longer the investment is held, the amount of gain ultimately recognized is going to be reduced. So if you hold it for 5 years, you get to increase your basis by 10%. If you hold it for 7 years, you're going to get a 15% basis. The problem is, unless the statute is changed because of the sunsetting, you're never going to get to exclude 100% of what you invest into an opportunity zone. That's how everyone had hoped this would work up front. One thing we should talk about is state income tax planning with trusts. And a very big idea now, because of SALT and because of the Kaysner case at the federal level by the U.S. Supreme Court, and because of the Felding case in Minnesota, a Minnesota Supreme Court case, more and more taxpayers are saying, is there a way to create a trust in another state where there's no income tax so that I do not have to pay income tax to my home state? Also involved in this is the 199 Cap A. Can we get more 199 Cap A deduction by state and federal income tax planning with trusts? The interesting thing that's evolved in really the last 10 years is to structure incomplete gift non-grantor trusts and to structure completed gift non-grantor trusts. Now, in an incomplete gift trust, the trust is taxed by itself. However, you never have to file a gift tax return. You're not using up any of your exemption. And when you die, what's going to happen when you die, that is going to be still included in your estate, and you're going to receive a step up in basis. It's actually a very powerful thing. So if you have a chance to take a more in-depth class on what are often called NINGs and DINGs, it's probably a good idea, because in states like Alaska, Delaware, Nevada, Wyoming, South Dakota, there is a lot of energy in getting people to create trusts there and try to avoid state income tax. The Supreme Court holding in Kaysner furthers that. Okay, so there's another area we can spend some time on. A lot of this is going to be driven by the SALT deduction, loss of the SALT deduction, because if my state income tax rate was 10%, but the federal government was underwriting 40% of that, I'm really only paying a 6% tax rate. That's gone, especially for wealthy families where that $10,000 SALT deduction is meaningless. So we do want to take some time and learn more about state income tax planning with trust. A good friend of the AICPA on this has been Steve Oceans, a lawyer in Las Vegas, Nevada, O-S-H-I-N-S. There's a lot on his website about doing this. And then a couple more ideas. Gifts to trusts. We've kind of lost a little bit of energy on annual exclusion gifts. It used to be a much bigger thing. And I think it's going to become a bigger thing going forward. What's going on here during this presidential campaign is a great deal of attention between the two different philosophies on the estate tax. One philosophy is probably the current philosophy we're in, high exemption, low, relatively low rate at 40%. And the other philosophy, of course, is just the opposite, lower exemption, higher rates. And we have to be very much attuned to that. Between now and the end of the year, you certainly want to evaluate annual exclusion gifts, but then more importantly, get your clients in the habit of making their annual exclusion gifts in January, not in December. Now, why do you do it in January? Because some of us are going to die during a particular year. And if we always make our gifts on January 1st or 2nd, we're going to make sure we get our annual exclusions for that year. And a lot of times you can push tremendous amount of growth out by using annual exclusions. A long time ago, I represented a lady. She was in her mid-90s, and she was close to 100 children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, a couple of great-great-grandchildren, and she kept track of all this wonderfully. And then we would always write out checks at the beginning of January every year. I would help her with that process. And she was moving, I think the exemption was smaller than maybe $10,000, but she was moving a lot of money each year. And her husband had a very successful business. And she had a big estate tax problem, but this helped her. Now, you can also do annual exclusion gifts in trust for grandchildren. If you don't want to burn up your GST exemption, you can create a 2642C trust, which is a standalone trust where the grandchild is the only beneficiary and where the grandchild has a general power of appointment. Now, the other thing we should talk about is exemption gifts. The whole thought here is, do we use any of our $10 million inflation-adjusted gift before that sunset? So all that is set to sunset on 12/31/25. And the question becomes, should we be making gifts earlier? Now, that sunset is what's in the law. It is going to happen unless the Republican Party controls the House, the White House, and the U.S. Senate. And that's about 6-7% of the time one party will control Congress. But the pendulum swings on that. So what we're really looking at is a very low probability of the Republicans being able to keep that exemption high. And what we need to do is start talking to our clients about this. Now, we also need to be talking to our clients about the scenario where someone like Senator Warren is elected president, and her plans would be to bring the exemption down to $3.5 million with a little bit higher rate than we have right now. Now, if that happens, a lot of your clients are going to be running for the door between November 10th and the end of the year, because they're going to be thinking, if that would happen, I'm going to lose the $10 million inflation-adjusted exemption I have. Now, how that works is that you're deemed to give away the exemption you received first. So think of it as FIFO, first in, first out. And so the exemption that you were given on January 1st, 2011, when we went to a $5 million exemption, you would use that first. And then if we sunset, what you're going to lose in that sunset was the exemption you were given on January 1st, 2018. So this creates a really tough spot for a lot of couples, because they're going to be forced to make a very large $10 million inflation-adjusted gift. And once they get that, to get that property out of their estate and to use that exemption before they lose it. So you want to be very careful of that and start to talk to your clients about this, because what you don't want to do is go to someone next November and say, in the next 50 days, I need you to give away $20 million. That's a big ask, unless somebody's extremely wealthy. But if someone is worth $30 or $40 million and you ask them to give away half their net worth, that's a big stretch, okay? But if you start asking now, in planting that strategy in their mind, I think that can be a very powerful thing. We do want to talk about grants in the current environment. Grants can be very powerful in today's environment, mostly because of the incredibly low interest rate. Now, what a grant is your clients transfer property into a grant-to-retained annuity trust. It is a statutory trust under Section 2702 of the Code, and they take back annuity payments over a fixed term of years. And so they're going to get those annuity payments back over a fixed term of years. And it's usually well within their life expectancy, because grants do not work if you die during the grant term. Now, at the end of the grant, after the grantor's taken the property back, whatever's left passes to the beneficiaries of the grant. Almost always the grantor's children, because you cannot have a grant for grandchildren, because you're not allowed to allocate GST exemption to a grant. Now, why does a grant work? A grant works because of payments of trust income taxes by the grantor. It's a grantor trust. You pay the income taxes on it if you're the grantor. A grant works because of valuation adjustments on assets transferred. And a grant works because of the arbitrage between the return on the property and the 75-20 rate. The 75-20 rate for November 2019 will be 2%. The question becomes, can you beat a 2% hurdle rate? Annuity payments provide an income stream to the grantor, the ability to make gifts of substantial amounts of property tax-free. The grantor pays income tax on trust income, leaving more assets in the grant for the remainder beneficiaries. This reduces the taxable income of the grantor, and valuation adjustments increase the effectiveness of the sale for estate tax purposes. a sale or a gift. So we have a lot going on. The laundry clauses can also come into place, but to protect you from going over. But most importantly, Norman LeGrat, it's almost impossible to get in gift tax trouble, because if you put $5 million in a grant and you took back an annuity stream with a present value of $4,999,900 and the government doubled the value of the gift, your annuity stream would also double. Now, there are disadvantages to a grant, and they're very serious. If the grantor dies before the end of the grant term, the assets in the grant will be included in the grantor's estate. And if you live, your beneficiaries are going to have a carryover basis, i.e. no step-up in basis. And there is a risk that the return will not exceed the 2% 75-20 rate for November, and you'll actually move backwards and that you'll accomplish nothing with a grant. I think that's a relatively low risk right now. Again, be very conscious with a grant that if you die during the grant term, the property is going to be included in your estate. So if you were representing a 90-year-old gentleman, you probably wouldn't do a 15-year grant. On the other hand, maybe you would do a 15-year grant for his 50-year-old son. So we have covered a lot of ground today. We've talked about some estate planning ideas. We've talked about some income tax planning ideas. On behalf of the PFP section, this has been Bob Keebler. If you enjoyed this podcast, we highly encourage you to visit the PFP section website and access additional information on year-end tax planning. Stay tuned for Sarah Bradley, CPA, who will tell you how to find these valuable resources. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Want more information, resources, tools, and guidance on technical and practice management topics? Visit aicpa.org/PFP and check out the show notes for this episode as well. So if you're not already a member, think about joining the PFP section, which is designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your financial planning practice to the next level. You'll gain access to a robust selection of high-quality technical and practice management resources like guides, 24/7 access to an online learning library, client communication and education tools, up to 8 hours of free CPE, and more. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue bringing valuable and relevant content. And subscribe to our podcast channel so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.